Imagine getting a report from the dream world, communicating with someone who's dreaming. It might sound far-fetched, but that's the amazing accomplishment scientists recently made. It's kind of a first contact with another state of consciousness. The experiment took advantage of the fascinating phenomenon of lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming occurs when you become consciously aware that you're in a dream and even direct the path it takes.
I'm able to remember a lot of my dreams kind of just, I guess, by default. So I've always been interested in them. And once I heard about the idea of being able to control your dreams and basically do anything within them, I mean, like, who wouldn't want to have like a playground in your mind? So that's what got me fascinated by lucid dreaming.
Chris Mazurek is one of 36 dreamers in the United States and Europe who took part in 4 interactive dreaming studies. At the time, he was a freshman at Northwestern University in Chicago.
The first time that I took a nap for them and, you know, they put the electrodes on my head was the first time I had a lucid dream. And it was very, very different than anything I could have imagined it would be like. Maybe culture shock isn't the right word to use, but it was such an odd, intense, amazing feeling that was so different from normal life.
But something even stranger than a lucid dream itself happened to Chris in this study. While he was in a dream, someone was able to talk to him. And without waking or coming out of the dream, he was able to communicate back. Dr. Ken Paller is the senior scientist on this study. He's a professor of psychology and director of the Cognitive Neuroscience Program at Northwestern University. Dr. Paller, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Bob. Glad to be with you.
Now, for people who aren't familiar with this idea of lucid dreaming, just give me an overview of what it is.
Well, lucid dreaming is simply defined as being in a dream and knowing that you're in a dream. So a beginning step to actually controlling your dream, which is another possibility once you understand that it's simply something your brain has created at the moment.
So what made you think that you could tap into a lucid dream and communicate with the person who's doing the dreaming?
Well, since the 70s, it's been known that lucid dreamers can signal back to someone observing, and they can do that in several ways. The best one is perhaps moving their eyes, because during a dream, your body is quite paralyzed, but your eyes move freely. And when you move your eyes in your dream world, the actual eyes in your body move. And we can record that quite easily with electrodes we put on the face. So given that we knew lucid dreamers could communicate out, the unknown was, can we communicate in effectively enough to have a conversation? And that's what we did in this study.
Well, walk me through the process. How do you train someone like Chris to be able to do this in the lab?
Yeah, there can be 2 steps. One is to provoke a lucid dream and then to begin communicating. Now, some people have lucid dreams all the time. For example, the person in France who participated is a very frequent lucid dreamer, so he just went right into his lucid dream. But in our case, we had people that didn't necessarily have a lucid dream, and even frequent lucid dreamers don't necessarily have one every time. So to provoke it, we trained people to think carefully about their experience and decide whether it was a waking experience or a dream. And that's not necessarily easy to do, but every time they did it, we had a sound that occurred at the same time, like a little sound of a harp or a violin playing. And therefore, what we could do is, after that training, have them go to sleep. And when they're in REM sleep, we present that same sound that provokes the same response that they check. And in fact, sometimes then come to the conclusion that they're lucid. They made a signal indicating that they were lucid, this left-right movement of the eyes. And at that point, we could proceed and ask them a question, again, with sounds that we present. And we always present the sounds very softly because we don't want to wake them up. So they stay asleep and the brain is processing these sounds. Sometimes the sounds enter the dream experience. And then if that happens, we can communicate and get an answer to our questions.
Well, how obvious is it to the dreamer that they're actually in a dream when that happens?
Sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it isn't. And sometimes very weird things can happen and you you might think in your rational mind, you would think, well, this is crazy. It must be a dream. But in our dreams, often we just accept things normally. And that seems to be a characteristic of dreaming, so that our critical analysis is not quite online. And that's why we continue to just go with the flow during a dream, even though it can be quite bizarre. But on certain occasions, and especially with advanced training, with some practice at checking what reality is, you can jump into this lucid state. One of the things you can do is look at a word, look away, and then look back at it again. And if it's now a completely different word, that's a sign that you're in a dream. Other things you can do is look at your hand and see if there's anything unusual. Sometimes you can try to stick your finger right through your hand. If you can do that, you're probably in a dream. Another trick people use is they jump up and they see if they gently float back down, which is would be another sign that you're in a dream.
Well, here's Chris again describing what was happening to him when he first heard the cue and realized that he was dreaming.
I was in a dining hall on campus called Sarge, and I was with one of my friends, and we were ordering our food, and I realized that I didn't have my coat on, and it was cold outside, and I love my coat way more than I probably should. I just think it's an awesome coat, and so I was like, wait, I wouldn't be outside without my coat. And so after I heard the cue, I thought about that, and I was like, wait, none of this makes sense. This doesn't look like the dining hall on campus. At that point, I was like, wait, I'm in a dream. And then as soon as I realized that, I kind of like started falling backwards. The dream started to deteriorate because it's very hard to like maintain stability within a lucid dream. And I wasn't very experienced yet.
So, Dr. Poller, how do you know that someone like Chris is really sleeping when they report a story like that and not just pretending?
Well, we have to be recording their brain activity and their muscle activity and eye movements. This is a standard procedure called polysomnography. And with those recordings, there are standard criteria for deciding what stage of sleep people are in. Are they awake? Are they in REM sleep? Are they in one of the various non-REM stages? But in addition, if you're looking at the record during a few seconds during REM sleep, you can see that the eyes might be moving a bit, which doesn't seem to happen quite as much in deep sleep. And you can see that the muscle activity is really low. In fact, it's lower than just relaxing. It's the muscles are really inhibited so that you're, of course, not moving your body. And that's one of the signs of REM sleep. In addition, the brain activity from the EEG on the top of the head looks a lot like waking EEG. So it doesn't have the slow waves that you see in deep sleep. Those go away and you have more like a waking EEG. And so these are the analyses that we do to verify that someone's asleep. And then the signal that they made to us, a left-right movement of their eyes, stood out from the other eye movements. So in REM sleep, your eyes are moving around here and there, but they seldom make a broad all the way to the left, all the way to the right movement. And so that was the signal that people were told to make if they realize they're in a lucid dream. And so when we saw both REM sleep and then that lucidity signal, we concluded that they must be in a lucid dream. And then on top of that, when we wake them up, we ask them what happened, and they can tell us the course of events about when they heard particular sounds, about what eye movements they make, and see how that matches what we recorded electrically.
Oh, I see. So they're wearing one of those caps that has all the sensors on it that measures brain waves?
Exactly, that's right. And then furthermore, for this experiment, we took all the data from the four different groups, and we sent all the data to experts in Paris, and three independent experts decided whether it was REM sleep or not. So we had this independent analysis to confirm whether we were in fact testing people during REM sleep.
Well, here's Chris again describing what happened when your team first managed to communicate with him. He said when he heard the cue, he was dreaming he was the protagonist inside the Legend of Zelda video game.
So after I signaled that I was lucid, they played a math problem for me in my dream, which was 8 minus 6. And to answer the math problem, I did two left-right eye movements to correspond to the number 2. Which is the signal that we had worked out before. And then coming out of that, I had a false awakening, which is where I woke up in the dream thinking I was awake, but I was still asleep. So I dreamt that I was still in the lab waking up, but I actually wasn't. And then I woke up again, which was really disorienting. And then Karen told me that I had gotten it and they saw the answer, and I was really relieved.
What went through your mind when that happened, when you realized that you'd actually reached him within his dreams?
Well, we were very happy because we had been working on that for years, and that was the first successful episode. In fact, we thought we were the first ones in the world to have ever done that at that point. So we were quite pleased and ready to continue and get a few more examples. It was after that time that we learned that our colleague in Germany, Chris Apple, had done the same experiment a few years earlier, but just never published it. It was only in his master's thesis. So we decided to group our results together with his to make a stronger story.
So out of the 36 study participants, how many were actually able to answer the questions for your lab and the other labs involved?
In this sample, there were 6 people who had answered questions correctly, and that's given the strong criteria of REM sleep confirmed by independent scorers, and the signals also confirmed independently that the 2 was in fact a 2.
Well, 6 out of 36, that's not very many.
No, it's a difficult phenomenon to create. It's not like you can make it happen every time. So our interesting conclusion is that it's possible to make it happen and things have to be right. And now we're working on methods to make it happen more frequently. But from the number of examples we had, we're 29 different times in this particular sample among those 6 people. We're convinced that it can happen and that now we can work on how to make it happen more and then how to ask more interesting questions because, you know, we didn't really need the answers to those math questions. That was just a way to prove that communication was effective. And so now we can go ahead and ask people questions about their dreams. We can find out in real time what they're dreaming about. We can look at their brain activity at the same time, try to make sense of what happening in the brain, and then put that together with their dream report when they wake up to try to understand more about why we dream, what dreams are useful for, how they influence our waking activity, our memory, our creativity, our problem solving, maybe even our well-being.
Now, this question that you were asking them, what is 8 minus 6, did they know about that beforehand? Did you tell them this is what the question is going to be? Give us the answer.
Yes, the people knew the kinds of questions they were going to ask, but they didn't know which specific question we would ask at any time. So they had to do the computation. They couldn't have the answers prepared in advance for the questions because there were a variety of different questions and they didn't know which one was going to come up. In this case, Chris didn't know which math problem we were going to pick. In the study in Paris, the person didn't know, were they going to ask me whether I speak Spanish or do I like chocolate? Do I watch football? There are a series of different questions. They had the idea that the questions would be asked and they knew how they were going to answer with either their eye movements or facial twitches. And these were the methods we used to get the signals back. So that was all set out in advance, but not the specific questions so that we could be confident that we were actually having true communication.
I guess the next step would be, okay, you got that. Now calculate pi for me.
No, we want to know about their dreams. We want to know, well, what's happening in the moment? And, you know, are you flying right now or are you standing on the ground? You know, we can ask these questions and try to figure out, you know, when you count to 10, is it actually 10 seconds that elapses or is it a time totally different in a dream? There's already some evidence on that question suggesting that time is perhaps normal in a dream rather than sped up.
Well, how much do the lucid dreamers tend to remember when they wake up about actually communicating with you?
Yeah, that's the whole problem with studying dreams right now is people don't always remember when they wake up what happened in their dream. And they might forget parts, they might distort parts, they might not be remembering correctly. So we need this converging evidence from what happens during the dream in our communication, as well as the brain activity that we can record, and we can use all those together. But if we have to rely only on the dream reports, we're in trouble because they're in a different state of mind. They're awake and they're trying to remember something that happened minutes earlier. They might not even be sure. Did it happen just before I woke up or did it happen a half hour earlier? It's hard to tell when you wake up and you recall a dream exactly even when it happened. So there's a lot of shortcomings of the waking dream report. We need to add to it with some additional methods. And in addition, we can actually make people change their dreams. So that's an interesting phenomenon here. Not only do our sounds get in there and allow us to ask questions, but we can give suggestions about what they should dream about and change the course of the dream that way.
Well, what do you think is going on inside the brain that allows a person to become consciously aware while they're dreaming that they're communicating to the outside world.
Yeah, one hypothesis is that a lucid dream is different from a non-lucid dream in that the frontal lobe becomes more effectively online and able to help you evaluate the situation and make judgments about it that are more sensible and actually not just accepting everything that happens, but questioning, why did this happen? And is this a normal event to happen? So that seems to be a frontal lobe function that could be investigated more.
So now that you've shown that you can, in at least a very fundamental way, reach into someone's dreams and communicate with them while they're asleep, what kind of applications could this be put to?
Well, some of the hypotheses about dreaming are that it helps us with problem solving, thinking over things that are bothering you and trying to bring up relevant memories from your past that might connect to it and allow you to make these distant connections. So even though the dream itself might be a totally weird narrative story, it might connect with what your brain is doing that's allowing you to sort your memories out and use them more effectively when you wake up. So we want to understand more about how sleep and dreams in particular could relate to this memory processing and the creativity that can happen that helps you solve problems once you're awake.
What about things like getting rid of bad dreams, nightmares, PTSD?
Yes. In terms of nightmares, there's an important line of research to look at how becoming lucid can help you with a nightmare. In one step, it could just allow you to wake up. But another step would be it could allow you to confront the nightmare itself and try to understand it better and perhaps work it through so it doesn't come back to you. Many disorders have difficulties with sleep. PTSD, as you mentioned, is one. Depression is another. And these problems of sleep might be contributing to the disorder itself. So we are now looking at how you could actually change what's happening during sleep and see if that could promote more healthy behaviors when you wake up. So we think there's a lot of usefulness of sleep, but it might not always be optimal. And there could be some ways that we could correct sleep to be more effective for people so that they wake up in a healthier state.
Dr. Poller, thank you very much for your time.
Happy to talk to you, Bob. It's been fun.
Dr. Ken Poller is the director of the Cognitive Neuroscience Program at Northwestern University in Chicago. Now, if you're interested in lucid dreaming, Dr. Poller's team made an app for that. It's called Lucid. And right now it's only available on Google Play, but they say it'll also be available in the Apple App Store soon.